Hello, this is Dr. Gary Sherman, the Heart Guy, and I welcome you to our exciting and informative podcast titled The Heart Guy Presents The Heart of the Matter, bringing you interesting discussions and conversations related to the vast and important subject of heart disease, heart failure, and organ donation, and everything related to those things in today's ever-changing world. I'm extremely honored to have as my special guest today an inspiring contributor to our global heart health community, Dr. Asha Subramanian. Dr. Asha is a board-certified family medicine and lifestyle medicine physician with specific expertise in evidence-based lifestyle change. She received her BA and her MA in psychology with honors and distinction from Stanford University. Dr. Asha received her combined MD Master of Public Health degree from Oregon Health and Science University School of Medicine and completed her family medicine residency at the University of Pittsburgh St. Margaret Hospital. Dr. Asha also completed a fellowship in community health at Georgetown University Medical Center, and she is an assistant professor at Georgetown University in the Department of Family Medicine. In 2018, Dr. Asha obtained a certificate in plant-based nutrition through Cornell University, and in 2019 became a diplomate of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. Dr. Asha is also a recipient of the Washingtonian Top Docs Award. Her professional interests include lifestyle medicine and the use of good nutrition, exercise, sleep, and other strategies to optimize health. Health behavior change, whole food, plant-based cooking, and community health advocacy. Dr. Asha created DIA, Lifestyle and Wellness LLC, to better help individuals and families attain their health and wellness goals. Dr. Asha, welcome to The Heart Guy Presents The Heart of the Matter.
Thank you so much, Gary, for that wonderful introduction. I'm so honored to be with you on this podcast today.
Yeah, I always know I'm in a good place when the introductions are long because, you know, you've achieved so much in such a short period of time. And so for that, it's a good message to our listeners that nothing comes without the hard work.
That is very true, but it's been an excellent journey.
Yeah, good. And you've enjoyed it so far. So tell me, where did you grow up and when did you know you were going to be a doctor?
Yeah, so I grew up outside of Buffalo, New York, in between Buffalo and Niagara Falls, in a suburb outside of the city. And when I was growing up, I always had a passion for animals and animal welfare. Even though I didn't have pets, I would bother my parents and say I wanted a dog or a cat. Of course, the answer was always no. But I was convinced that I would be a veterinarian. I loved science, I loved animals, and I loved caring for others. And that's what I wanted to do. And I felt like from my earliest age that I wanted to be a vet. And when I got to high school, my classmate in high school also wanted to be a vet. But yet when I looked at her, she had been volunteering in a vet clinic. She lived in a little more rural area. And I started thinking, well, she wants to go to Cornell for veterinary school. And I haven't done any of this. So maybe I am not cut out to be a veterinarian. And I really didn't have any mentors in veterinary medicine. So then I started looking around and I said, well, maybe I can be a teacher because I love teaching and helping others. And then combined with the science, midway through college, I decided to apply for medical school. I think it's been a very interesting journey since, not a straight path journey by any means.
Yeah. And so, you know, and I know I mentioned this to you personally, but my son went to Cornell University and he went to law school there. So I spent 7 years up on that campus. I know very well how strong a veterinary program they have, but also more importantly, how wonderful it is up there in the Finger Lakes. That's a great place to be. I'm glad you got your couple of years there at Cornell when you were doing your certificate in plant-based nutrition. So we both got to appreciate that part of New York. I think when most people think of New York, they don't think of anything that looks like that up there.
No, they don't. Most people think immediately of New York City, which is very understandable. It's the global icon, essentially. But Western New York State, Central New York State, there's so much to be enjoyed up there.
Yeah, absolutely. A little known fact, by the way, before we get into all of the interesting things that you're going to share here, you know that New York State has more coyotes than any other state in the country.
Wow, I did not know that. That's so interesting.
Yeah, it is. No, again, nobody thinks of that. When they hear New York, they just think of, taxi cabs and loud people. But in fact, there's a beautiful nature up in New York State where I miss being there. My son is well past that at this point. But we'll make our trips upstate New York very, very shortly now that COVID has opened up a bit.
Yes.
Getting back to your important information and what you're going to share with us today, tell us a little bit more about what family medicine is and why you chose family medicine during your training.
Yes. So family medicine is the only specialty where you can care for someone before birth. So essentially in the womb, you care for the pregnant mother and all the way through their senior years and to the end of their life. So birth to death, so to speak, or cradle to grave. So family medicine works with all ages. It works with all genders. And the lovely thing about family medicine is the name family medicine. So you get to know families. I take care of the parents. I take care of the children. In some cases, I've taken care of grandparents as well. So you really get to know the family unit. And it's so important in medicine to get to know those other social factors. And that's what family medicine really shines at. So thinking about the context of your patient in the community, in society, you know, what are other factors that might impact their health and their well-being? And I was very thrilled to find the specialty of family medicine because then I would know a little bit of everything. I didn't want to be, Gary, one of these people that was on a plane and they would call for a doctor and I would say, oh no, I'm an ophthalmologist. I only know about eyes. I can't help you.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah. And to that, by the way, so my older son, I bragged already about my younger son who's an attorney, but my older son is a psychiatrist and he's a DO. I know that in applying to osteopathic schools, family medicine was really a centerpiece. And it was important for their students to want to be involved in family medicine when they applied. And so I know about that through his experience. At this point, he's practicing as a psychiatrist, but I think that background in family medicine and a more holistic approach has actually helped him very much with his patients. So I do have an appreciation for what we're talking about here. And I think it's going to touch so many more people as well. So thank you for having selected that specialty. I think it's great. So how does a lifestyle medicine differ from family medicine?
So lifestyle medicine really is the foundation of all medicine. But unfortunately, I feel like, at least in America, the American healthcare system has lost sight of lifestyle medicine. And now we're coming back to it. So really, lifestyle medicine is an evidence-based approach to preventing, treating, and even in some cases, reversing chronic diseases. So it focuses on replacing behaviors that are unhealthy with behaviors that are more positive. So for example, this could be increasing your physical activity or adding more nutritionally dense, nutritious foods into your diet, better managing stress, also trying to cut back on alcohol, quit smoking, don't do drugs, all of those things, as well as focusing on sleep, making sure you have high quality and adequate sleep, and also making sure you have a strong community, a strong support system. And this has really come into focus, I think, this past year with the COVID-19 pandemic. The loss of community really hit people hard. The loss of community in the common sense where people could gather freely and such.
Yeah, and to that, again, I've been this past year a supervisor for New York State contact tracing for COVID-19. And the impact that this virus had on families everywhere, but even here in Long Island, it was extraordinary and continues to be. So I think you're right. I think lifestyle medicine is more important than ever before, and that's not going to go away anytime soon. We are going to be feeling the effects of COVID-19 for many, many years to come, and it's our new reality. And so I personally am thankful for your participation in lifestyle medicine, as many of our listeners probably are as well. So you shifted your career towards diet and lifestyle change. Did this relate to something that had become important to you in your personal life?
Yes, I think that both personally and professionally. So professionally, I started out as a newly minted family physician, and I had learned a little bit about healthy eating, a little bit about physical activity. I didn't really learn about the other pillars of lifestyle medicine. So I said, okay, well, let me, you know, go out into the community and try to help people get healthier and help people have higher quality health and more fulfilling lives. And quickly found that I ran into these roadblocks, which are that when people have really any kind of chronic disease, they are on a lot of medicines, that I would be managing their medicines in my 15-minute visits versus talking to them about causes of illness. So rather than talking to them about healthy nutrition and really meaningfully on physical activity or managing stress, I would be thinking about, okay, what side effect do they have from their diabetes medicine? Or is their blood pressure medicine not working? Okay, I need to increase it. And that's really what was taught in medical school and residency, unfortunately. I think that people go into medicine wanting to work on the pillars of lifestyle medicine, but we're not really taught. I hope now that students in medical residency and medical school are taught that more, but at least some years ago when I was in that educational phase, it wasn't. And I got frustrated because I would see over and over people with diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol, obesity, different illnesses, so many of which are impacted by the way we live and can be changed by the way we live and how we eat and such. So that led me to start exploring other avenues. What else can I do for these patients? And I also had some health challenges at the time. And I thought, well, as I learn about lifestyle medicine, why not implement that into my own life? I was struggling with something called endometriosis, which is a chronic illness that women experience where the uterine tissue grows outside of the uterus for some reason. We still don't know. And it's very painful. So a lot of chronic pain, it can lead to infertility. I also saw through training, eating the poor nutrition type food, so more like processed food and hospital food and such, there was some weight gain, sugars started creeping up. So not diabetes, but kind of going towards there, pre-diabetes. And I started thinking, well, what can I do to improve my own health as well? So really it was to help myself as well as my patients.
Yeah, and that's such a great lesson and so many lessons to be learned. One of the things that you mentioned that I want to share from my own experience, long-term now, 23 years as a cardiac patient, the last 6 years in heart failure, is that I see a change in the paradigm, if you will, of medicine in general, to coming away from the procedural focus, that is how many procedures and tests can be done in a day, to a more patient-centered approach, even in the specialties. I see those changes in my hospital, and I think you're right. I think that everything is going more towards a more holistic, a more patient-centered approach to medicine. So I think you're right on target with that. But I do think even the specialties are following suit and realizing that there's actually more value, even more materialistic value in making their efforts patient-centered as opposed to procedural-centered.
I agree. I think if you and I speak another 10 or 20 years from now, I think the landscape will look a lot different than it is today.
Yeah. And again, I see it changing before our eyes from a patient's point of view, I will tell you that. So tell us about some successes that you've seen in lifestyle medicine in your practice. You probably have to change the names to protect the innocent and stick to HIPAA rules, but yes. Perhaps you can tell us about some stories.
Sure. I have a patient who was struggling with high blood pressure and also with extra weight and high cholesterol. And I worked with her over a period of just a few months, and we made very simple changes. We tried to focus on foods that she already likes, and we tried to lower the fat content of that food by switching to more plant-forward, plant-based products, or adding more vegetables, adding more beans, more fruits, and nuts, seeds, whole grains. We also talked about how we can have her get some regular physical activity. So we worked on weekly goals, and I actually did check-ins with her weekly on the phone. And this was actually during the pandemic, so we weren't doing a lot of in-person visits in the outpatient clinic setting. And we worked together for about 3 months or so, and you could see week by week slowly that her blood pressure was coming down. I was able to take her safely off of some of her medicines, her cholesterol numbers, her total cholesterol dropped by 30 points. Her HDL, good cholesterol, went up. Her LDL also dropped significantly. And she was able to lose in only a few months about 25 5 pounds, which is really amazing because to her, she said, you know, I never thought this was possible. I've tried lots of ways to do things. And then I always feel like I can't sustain it. I can't keep going on my own. And she really felt like this was something she could incorporate. And then she got her husband on board, who's my patient as well. So both of them have done a wonderful job.
Yeah. And by the way, even personally, my dietary changes. Yeah. If you eliminate certain things, for me, it was sugar. When I got sugar out of my diet, I dropped a lot of weight, which was important for me waiting for a heart transplant. People who go through heart transplant gain a considerable amount of weight afterwards because of all the steroids that were on postoperatively to fight the rejection of the heart. And with that, we have to be in the best shape we can possibly be in. So I've already dropped 23 pounds and I got another 10 to go, but I'm well below the BMI now for my heart transplant. So you're right. Everything is about what we put into our bodies. So this is really on target.
Well, congratulations, Gary. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah. And you know what? It's not that hard. You can actually find a lot of good foods and a lot of good things to eat that don't contain sugar and are not carbohydrates. And, you know, I gave up pasta and rice for the most part and bread for the most part. But, you know, I'll have a little bit once in a while, but really eliminating those things in addition to the sweets and some of the desserts, you know, really does make a big difference. And it's as simple as that. It's not simple the first week, but after that, it gets a lot easier. For those of you who want to try it, I did it, so you can do it.
Yes. And I want to remind listeners that usually it takes about 3 weeks or so. It can be a few more weeks after that, but about 21 days to really cement a change. So that first week is tough. And I think having support of a qualified healthcare professional is so important during that time, during the first 21 days, especially.
Yeah.
I think once
I was going to ask you, I was going to ask you specifically that, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was going to ask you why you think it's so difficult for people to make the kinds of changes that seem necessary in order to comply with lifestyle medicine.
I think a lot of it is our healthcare professionals, they want to do the right thing. We all want to do the right thing, but we just don't know about how to help people through this behavior change process. You know, it's not something that's commonly taught in medical schools. It's not something that we're taught how to prescribe medicine and deprescribe medicine and what to look out for and side effects and when to refer for a heart transplant, for example, or, you know, when to refer to a specialist as a primary care professional. But as healthcare professionals, we just don't have that knowledge as a group to help patients through this. But I think that's changing, like we discussed earlier. I also think that people, they sometimes don't know that this can happen. Like they're not really informed by their healthcare professionals. And even if they are, it's very cursory, like eat better, exercise more. Well, what does that mean? You know, exercise more. If you're not exercising at all, what does that mean? And I give people prescriptions. We talk about it together and we say, okay, you will add 15 minutes of stationary biking 3 days a week for the next 2 weeks. So specific to get them started really on this road to wellness. So it's also in our society, unfortunately, you know, we have a lot of social factors at play. There's fast food and processed food really available at every turn. And, you know, our metabolism and our physiology is not modern day. It's based on ancient genetics and ancient physiology where there wasn't a McDonald's on every corner and a, you know, 7-Eleven and Dunkin' Donuts and such. So I think that there's so many factors at play. And I think also there's an industry behind quick fixes. And by that, I mean, oh, take this pill and you can be fine and still live your life the way you've been living it. And I think that's misleading. And I think that, you know, people once you talk to them about you can change, like you, just because your mom had diabetes and your dad had diabetes, you don't have to have it. Yes, there's a genetic component, but there is a whole area of science called epigenetics that tells us that the environment that we live in and the way we live our lives really can influence our genetics, even for generations to come. There have been studies in pregnant women that if pregnant women eat a certain way and the children of the women have a certain taste preferences, which is just so fascinating to me.
Yeah. And you hit on so many interesting points. The first is that, and I know this as somebody who is in a position where I teach certain things for people. I think we all want structure to be able to make changes and improvements in our life. I think you're right. I think that we don't have a plan, but that could go to anything that we're trying to learn to improve ourselves in that's new. And I think if you give somebody a recipe, so to speak, or a plan or a structure, it's much more easy for people to do it, incorporate it, and also to succeed. And you can actually measure those things from time to time as far as success goes. Even if it's weight loss, you can say, hey, look, you lost, 3 pounds this month, and that's a big deal. When people see the improvement in the things that they're trying to do, I think it urges them on to continue to do those things. And as far as what we put into our bodies, going back to that, Leslie Hanselman, who will at this point have already been on my podcast as we speak now, she invented the Cormium app, which is an app that you can download simply on your phone, and it keeps track of sodium intake and fluid intake, and even has recipes and things like that to offer to people to control their sodium intake. More focused on people that have had heart problems or heart operations, but I think it can go to anybody who's interested in trying to improve their health. And all this about epigenetics, well, you got me reading. I'm going to start reading about epigenetics today because that's really interesting. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome. And I think you bring up a great point, Gary. So technology, the growth, just exponential growth in technology and all the apps now on phones and apps you can use on laptops, different programs, I think are so helpful. And I think you have to just make sure that the person is ready for change. So definitely people need structure. But I think, let's say somebody came to me and I just said, well, you need to do this and you need to do that. And here's a plan. You're probably not going to see that person again, or you're going to see that person again and going to change. So you got to meet people where they are. I live my life a certain way personally, but I'm not going to impose that on everybody. But I want them to know and make informed choices about these things, about that they can be advocates for their own health and they can be empowered.
Yeah, for sure. So what kinds of cooking and nutrition classes are you currently teaching? And what kind of services do you specifically provide? And are any of these services covered by insurance or Medicare or anything like that?
So I'm doing a series of monthly, very low cost cooking classes that are virtual, and they focus on whole food, plant-based cooking. And the topic is food and mood. So we are going to talk about how foods can positively impact our mental health, which is a really interesting topic to me because, again, going through the pandemic and we see the explosion of depression, anxiety, and other mental health concerns. So I am really excited to teach this class, and we can make the registration links available to anyone who would be interested in participating. So that is another topic. So Alzheimer's, dementia, all these illnesses where people think, well, my grandfather got it, my father got it, I'm going to get it. There's absolutely years and years, decades of research that tells us that that you don't have to get Alzheimer's. You're not destined necessarily. You may have the genetics, but you can turn the genes on and off by how you eat and how you live. And I actually hope to offer classes in heart health, diabetes, women's health, and many other topics.
I was going to say, we're going to make sure that those things are listed in our podcast notes. So if for the listeners out there, you don't have to scribble all these things down. They will be in the podcast notes. And thank you for providing that, Dr. Asha. I think that's going to be so valuable to the people listening to our program today.
Thank you. And then the second arm of what I do is I do individual work with patients, with clients. I don't take insurance at this time because insurance, unfortunately, does not cover the kind of health coaching work that I do with patients. But what I do is I work with patients one-on-one, clients one-on-one, and we work with where you're at now, what are your goals, how can we incorporate lifestyle change in a safe and effective way. And I walk together with you, step in step, to get you from where you are to where you want to be. And I've had success with clients doing that as well. Everything from weight loss, improved blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, all the way to chronic pain improvement, asthma, allergy improvement, mood improvement, so many things. A client who is very interested in reducing the burden of pain medicine that she takes for chronic pain and also improving her asthma and allergies as well as her diabetes. And we've been successfully working together for the past year or so. And there's been many positive changes, some of which we didn't even anticipate. I have other clients that I am working on for other chronic conditions. And really the common thread are people who want to make a change, but they're not getting that health coaching and health education expertise from their primary care or specialty medical professionals. And they want someone in their corner that has both the medical knowledge and the behavior change and lifestyle medicine expertise. But that can certainly change in the future.
I think there are lobbies and things like that, certainly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the wellness model is probably going to be something that we're going to see in the future as we shift away again from what we spoke about before, which was a procedure-centered approach to medicine, rather being able to incentivize our caregivers and our providers in keeping people healthy rather than just treating them when they're sick.
Absolutely, I agree. And I hope to see reimbursement and all the business side of medicine catch up to where we're at with lifestyle medicine in the near future. And yeah. There's a lot of lobbying on Capitol Hill for sure, and in state governments.
Yeah. And it makes sense too. I mean, I'm pretty sure that they do that in other countries. In some cases, we certainly need to do that in our country now that people want to get healthy and stay healthy. Are there any books or websites or apps that you can recommend to our listeners? I know I mentioned the Cormium app, that's Cormeum. For anybody who's interested, that's a valuable one for sodium and fluid. Are there any other books or websites that you like for our listeners to try and look out for?
Sure. There's so many out there now. I think one of the great ones is something called Undo It by Dr. Dean Ornish. And I have it here on my shelf. And Dean Ornish, along with his wife, Ann Ornish, wrote this book to talk about the four concepts of lifestyle medicine, which are eat less, move more, stress less, love more. So those are the concepts of lifestyle medicine sort of distilled. And he talks about how the science tells us over decades that we can improve and even reverse chronic conditions with these concepts. And I think this cuts across so many medical conditions. I mean, what is it now? 80% of people have at least one chronic disease in our country. So we definitely have a lot of work to do. And I think anything that we can do to help people improve their health and therefore increase their quality of life, increase as far as economic perspective, productivity, lower healthcare costs, all of it is tied together. Not only that, there's also sustainability, saving the environment, planetary health. So really the concepts in lifestyle medicine with whole food, plant forward, plant-based eating, and exercise, sleep, and all the other things we've talked about today are so key to global health. So that's why I'm really proud to be a part of this movement.
Yeah, and thank you for that, because I think this is all great. Such interesting information that you've provided today, and I thank you for that. Dr. Asha, it's been my great honor to have you as a guest on The Heart of the Matter. And on behalf of myself and our listeners, I thank you so much for all that you're doing in our community. This is all such current information. And I think everybody will be busy taking all their notes, listening to you, actually jotting down the things that we provide in our podcast notes. Thank you for your incredible dedication to your work and your enthusiasm, and certainly for sharing this time with us. I hope we can do this again soon.
Yes, thank you so much, Gary, for this opportunity. I'm so honored to be on this podcast and to be able to talk about this information with your listeners.
Yeah, this has been so much fun and so exciting. So we'll have you back soon. Thank you again. And that's our podcast for today. Please join me next time for another intriguing, informative, and entertaining conversation. Please visit my website at www.drheart2heart.net. That's D-R-H-E-A-R-T, the numeral 2, H-E-A-R-T.net for upcoming podcasts. Or if you'd like me to host an online presentation for your group or organization, if you'd like to be a guest on the Heart of the Matter podcast, please email me at theheartguyspeaks@gmail.com. Our podcast can be found on Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all you have to do is search The Heart Guy Presents The Heart of the Matter and you'll find it. And until next time, this is Dr. Gary Sherman wishing you peace and hope.